the ancient spiritual tradition of India, and not just India really, but Southeast Asia. Very essential part, foundational part, is meditation. And of course, here in the Western world, we've all heard this term, meditation, before. Everyone's heard the term before. And generally speaking, when we say meditation, people think of meditation, then a picture comes in their minds of someone sitting cross-legged in a lotus-type position, something like that, with their hands like this on their knees and their eyes closed, and this is meditation, at least in the minds of so many people. This is what they understand meditation. And if we mention the term yoga, then the same sort of picture appears in people's minds, usually someone sitting cross-legged, etc., like that. So, okay, that's fine, that's good, that's nice. But here, of course, now, right now, we're focusing on meditation, and the fact is, if one really looks into the subject and studies a little bit and tries to see what is the background and what's it all about, what's involved, then one sees there is a lot more to meditation. There's certainly a lot more to the subject of yoga than just someone sitting down with their eyes closed, that sort of idea. So we in Krishna consciousness, we teach meditation, we practice meditation. I personally, I've been practicing meditation a little more than 40 years, maybe 41 years, I think, maybe perhaps 42, but a little over 40 years. And certainly, there are different types of meditation, focusing the mind on different things in different ways, with different sort of corollary activities which assist with the meditation, like this. Traditionally, in India, the main, in a broad sense, a general sense, the main process or practice of meditation is not just sitting there silently with the eyes closed and legs crossed, that sort of idea. The main part of meditation is, it involves audible sound vibration. Audible. In other words, you say something, or perhaps you listen to something audible, something you can hear, in order to focus the attention. The reason for that, and after one has been doing that type of meditation for some time and has become attuned to it and used to it and is able to do it easily and nicely any time, practically any place, then after one has really come to grips with meditation in that way, then One may go on to silent meditation, just sitting and like that. The reason for that is that meditation, of course, the basic idea is to focus the mind, and particularly to focus the mind spiritually. But the thing is that this is the material world, and the environment, the social environment, cultural environment generally, is very material and even just materialistic. So to focus our attention spiritually in a very material environment, that's not so easy. It's not so easy. You can imagine perhaps someone, or even yourself, trying to do that sort of silent meditation, sitting somewhere, but in some busy street, like even here in Cape Town, Adderley Street, or in London, Oxford Street. Right now, Oxford Street, right now, it's probably 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning, Oxford Street. And to sit there, even just Adderley Street, 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning, and try and sit there and meditate, that would be a challenge, because there's so many sounds and sights and even smells and just things going on around us. And to focus the mind spiritually in such an environment is really not easy, and for most people I think it would really not be possible, and not in any meaningful, substantial way. But they would think you have to go to a very quiet place, maybe on top of Table Mountain, find some quiet place at the back of Table Mountain, or up in the Newlands Forest, perhaps somewhere up there, and then maybe you could sit and silently try to meditate, because in that type of situation there are not so many challenges in terms of things going on around you. So taking that into consideration, taking this point into consideration, generally, traditionally in India, in Southeast Asia, because it's not really just India, in Southeast Asia you'll see that the practice of meditation begins with audible sound vibration. To capture your attention, your sense of hearing. And it may also involve looking at something spiritual. Yeah. And in that way, your sense of sight is engaged in the process of meditation. And traditionally, the use of beads is there. I have mine here. I've been using these more than 20 years. Every day, usually plus or minus 3 hours a day, 7 days a week. They were white once. So when we use beads to keep track of how many times we've repeated the spiritual sound vibration, in Sanskrit we say mantra. So we use the beads to keep track of how many times we've chanted the mantra. So in that way, the sense of touch, one's skin, is engaged in the process of meditation. So this is the idea. to help people to focus their minds, because it's not so easy to focus your mind, even in a conducive type of environment. It may not be so easy to focus your mind, because you may just have different things on your mind. And you may have one of those minds which has a mind of its own. Yeah. The mind tends to be active, and it's really hard to get the mind to stop. Suspended animation for the mind, that's not easy. So therefore this practice is there, as I've been saying. Audible sound vibration, so the tongue is engaged in the process of meditation, the sense of hearing is engaged in the process of meditation. You may look at a picture, a spiritual picture. Your sense of sight is engaged in the process of meditation, and beads may be there, the sense of touch, and you could also burn some incense, some agarbatti, fragrant type of smoke is then created, and your sense of smell also becomes engaged, at least to some degree. So like this. And in fact, I can just mention my own experience for what it's worth. You know, we all have our experiences in life, and I have a few. So I first started meditation before I got involved with Hare Krishna. It was back maybe in 1970. I was not even 20 years old, plus or minus 20. And in those days, it was the hippie days, the later hippie days, and the Beatles. We were all Beatles fans in the good old days. The Beatles and even the Rolling Stones and people like that, the leaders of the youth culture, particularly the Beatles, they really got into meditation, actually in the later 60s. So it was considered very cool. It was considered extremely cool and in and groovy to meditate. So I got into meditation. And indeed, anyway, I got into a type of silent meditation, that particular school. And I was practicing it, maybe for several months at least, say. But I really struggled. It was nice. When it was nice, it was nice. But a lot of the time it was difficult for the reasons I mentioned earlier. That, you know, it's noise, people, things happening, and very easy to get distracted. So then, it was 1972, actually. 1972, I was at the time studying in university in Auckland, New Zealand, and the leader of the Hare Krishna movement at that time, Prabhupada, he visited the university there in Auckland, and I happened to see him, and he was talking about these things, this very subject, and encouraging us to do this type of meditation where you don't have to just sit there and it's all just in your mind and your senses are still there, and your senses may get attracted by things going on around you, and in that way it's very hard to keep the mind focused. So Prabhupada was teaching that, this type of meditation where there's audible sound vibration, your sense of sight is engaged, sense of touch and even sense of smell, and your tongue, and like this. It's pretty much pretty much your whole being, and particularly all your senses, are engaged in the process of meditation, which really helps. It really helps, and at least I can report to you all that when I started getting into it in 1972, 40 years ago plus, having tried to practice the silent meditation with varying degrees of success for several months, in 71 and perhaps very early 72. So then I started doing this audible mantra meditation, and I found that it really worked a lot better. Now, whether it works for you, I mean, I'm not trying to tell you, you know, what you are experiencing. You have to decide for yourself. But what I am suggesting, I'm telling you my experience, and I'm suggesting that you try that also. So we have our beads. If you want some, I assume they're available somewhere here on the festival. And we chant different mantras, spiritual sound vibrations on our beads. Spiritual sound vibrations. Of course, there are many. There are many, many spiritual sound vibrations. And it's open, it's up to you to choose. We, in our particular tradition, well, first of all, in general, amongst the many mantras, there are different mantras on different levels, or accepted to be, you could say, on different levels. And then amongst the sort of higher level mantras, what is called the Maha Mantra, or there are a couple of Maha Mantras. Maha means great, so like special, extra special mantras. Particularly what we focus on is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we chant this mantra, like I was saying earlier. I chant on my beads every day, a couple of hours, minimum. And I mean literally minimum, and I've been doing it literally every day for the last 40 years. Actually, it'll be 40 years on January the 7th, 2013, to be exactly 40 years. So you try it, and you see for yourself what happens to you, and then you make your own decisions. But certainly I can say that my own experience has been that it's really been quite amazing, actually. Amazing, wonderful amazing, like that. And, you know, I think the first amazing thing may be that I've actually been doing it for 2 or 3 hours minimum every day for 40 years. Can you imagine? Some just ordinary sound vibration, some pop song or something, whatever it may be. A couple of hours a day for 40 years, or even for 1 year, or even for 1 week. You try and see. So, I remember one time, it was actually a good few years ago, it was 1979, with another devotee, we visited, because I actually got involved ultimately in Krishna consciousness in England. So we went and visited George Harrison. At that time, well, he had been in the Beatles, unfortunately he passed away some years ago. But he was very interested in these things, extremely interested. So we went and visited him in his house outside London, Henley-on-Thames, a beautiful mansion. So we went and visited him there, and we were discussing these things with him for some hours. And he told us how he really got into the chanting. Previously, he had done the silent meditation, and like myself, he had found it difficult. Sometimes it was very nice, but sometimes it was really very difficult because of distractions. So, but he said one day, he had been to India a couple of times, and one day he and John Lennon, he and John Lennon, also previously of the Beatles, they had recently returned from India, and they went on a type of a yacht cruise, a boat cruise, in the Mediterranean. So there they were, cruising around Greece, the islands of Greece, on this like big luxury boat. And one day they woke up about 7 o'clock in the morning, and George said he said to John, "Let's chant Hare Krishna." Oh, look, there they go. Jai Prabhupada. So George said to John, "Let's chant Hare Krishna." And they picked up their guitars, because they're big musical men, and they started singing and playing guitars and singing Hare Krishna. And they got into it. They really got into it. And George told us, they, it was 7 o'clock they started. 9 o'clock came, 2 hours. They'd been chanting non-stop, literally non-stop. 9 o'clock came, someone knocked on the door and said, "It's time for breakfast." But they thought, well, later. And they continued singing Hare Krishna. And then around maybe 1 o'clock or so, lunchtime came. So they didn't have breakfast, in other words. They just carried on. Then lunchtime came. Someone knocked on the door. "It's lunchtime." And they thought, well, you know, we're into this. It's really going well. You know, we'll see, maybe later. So they carried on singing Hare Krishna. You know, they're getting serious now. This is like several hours, perhaps. And then eventually the evening came, and it was still going on, just the two of them singing Hare Krishna. So then the evening came, maybe 6 or 7 or so, something like that, and someone knocked on the door and said, "Hey, look, you haven't eaten all day. Come and have some supper at least." And they said, well, you know, we're into this. We'll see, maybe later. So they carried on. And they carried on until 5 the next morning. 22 hours. Non-stop. Maybe they stopped for bathroom breaks. But other than that, they didn't stop. They really didn't stop. And George told us it was such a powerful experience. He said he had chanted mantras before. He'd been involved in TM and some other things also. For some few years, he had been doing different types of meditation, and sometimes it was good and sometimes it was very difficult. But he persevered, at least. But he said, now, this experience was such a powerful experience. And George said he understood, this is really what meditation is meant to be. You get totally absorbed and you just lose contact with, or at least you become unaffected by your surroundings and the circumstances, what's going on. And your consciousness comes to a higher level. He said he felt so happy. He never felt anything like it at all in his life before. Just completely exhilarated in the extreme. And like he just wanted to carry on, except by now he was feeling a bit tired. He felt he just wanted to go on. So I asked George, what would it have been like, do you think, if you had sung one of your Beatles songs for 22 hours non-stop? Now, I don't know how many of you are from my generation. How many of you are familiar with Beatles songs? Okay, I believe you. I believe you too. Don't mind me saying that. So I actually asked him. Well, I asked him that. And then I asked him, what would it have been like if you had sung famous Beatles song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, for 22 hours? Even some of you young people may be familiar with that. Yeah. So George laughed, and he sort of thought momentarily while laughing and smiling. And George said, well, I think it would have been a hard day's night. If you know what I mean by that. A hard day's night. It would have been tough. And I think it would have been tough. And I think any one of you or anyone who were to try that, to sing that song or any popular song, you know, I hate to say it, I'm totally out of touch. I'm about as far out of touch with the modern day pop youth culture, or whatever it's called, as you could be. Which frankly may be good, actually. But anyway, I am. So, I don't know. But the basic point is, we're talking about spiritual sound vibration as opposed to material sound vibration. This is what we're talking about. Now, I've had this experience, which I already mentioned to you. It's an ongoing experience, including today, of chanting different mantras, although particularly the Hare Krishna mantra, but different mantras, actually, for 40 years. And my experience is that, you know, of course, we have our moods and some days it's easier, some days it's perhaps not so easy, just because of maybe health situations or things which may be happening in our lives. But in general, I can say that, my own experience, on the whole, it has been and continues to be a really wonderful experience. And an increasingly wonderful experience. We would say this is because it is spiritual sound vibration. Whereas I Want to Hold Your Hand, or whatever the latest pop song is, or even symphonic music, more cultured type of sound vibration, or, you know, like maybe poetry recitation, Shakespeare, Tennyson, Keats, In my youth, I was a big Dylan Thomas fan under Milkwood. So even some, you know, very cultured and extremely expert and very beautifully presented poetry or music, sound vibration. But after some time, if it's material sound vibration, you inevitably feel you've had enough and you need a change. You need something else. And even, like I said, I was a Dylan Thomas fan. And Dylan Thomas was famous, among many other things, other than being an alcoholic, actually, but among other things, he was famous for one statement he made, that as he was being interviewed, how do you do it? How do you write this poetry? It's just, you know, it's incredible. It's just so brilliant. How do you do it? And Dylan Thomas replied, my poetry is 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. This is what Dylan Thomas said. 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. I'm a poet and I don't even know it. So yes, material sound vibration acts like any material experience. We're talking about a category of experience, not just sound vibration, but we're talking about sight, we're talking about touching, we're talking about even like eating or drinking. These are all sensory experiences. But material sensory experience, the basic, what happens generally is, it's nice to start off with, and then after a while, okay, alright, it's not so nice, and after a while, you get tired of it. You get tired of it. This is material experience. This is typical of any material experience. So then you may stop for a while, and then you do it again after a while, and again it's nice, but again it tapers off, and then you stop. So, yes, but now we're talking about spiritual experience, something ongoing. Very wonderful. Because spirit, something which is actually spiritual, is eternal. And a spiritual experience has that nature also. Eternal. So this is why one may be able to chant, sing, speak, repeat spiritual sound vibration on an ongoing basis, literally indefinitely, and one does not become tired of it. But in fact, it actually becomes better. Of course, you know, we also have our part to play in it. We have to keep ourselves focused, because, you know, habit being what it is, we're easily distracted by different things that we're just used to in life in general. So therefore it's possible also to become distracted, but if you keep your attention focused, gradually you get into it, and then you can carry on, and it's very nice, and actually it becomes better and better. Yes, becomes better and better. Sometimes people say, not really now, but back maybe in the 70s, there was in America, there was a major reaction against the Hare Krishna movement from, would you believe, and don't mind me for saying it, the Christian people. Anyway, it's okay. We will not get into the details, but let us just say there was. And they, one of their, you know, they got really worked up about it. They said, we were brainwashing people. And that we, means people like me, were actually brainwashed. The idea of brainwashing actually comes from the Korean War. Some Americans got captured and sort of turned into zombies in different ways, and they put on television from North Korea, and like, you know, with wide open eyes, said, yes, we Americans are very bad. They were supposedly brainwashed. So we were meant to be brainwashed. You know, frankly, having been doing it for 40 years, I really don't think we're brainwashed. I really don't think I'm a zombie. I hope not. But seriously, I really don't think I'm a zombie at all. But in fact, my experience with chanting is that it actually helps in many ways. It helps, like I said, it makes you happier. Another part of the nature of spirit. Spirit is eternal. Spirit is also blissful. So a spiritual experience is a very happy experience. But spirit is also conscious. That kind of points us in the direction of a very important aspect of spiritual philosophy, that we are spiritual persons. These bodies, which are material, are essentially just vehicles, and they, our bodies, are being lent consciousness. You know, we're conscious. You're looking at me, you're hearing me, I can feel. This body is conscious. We're all conscious. But this point is that that consciousness is not the consciousness of the body. It is being lent to the body. Just as my watch. You know, many of us, I'm sure, have watches on right now which are ticking away. And most of them are quartz watches, so-called quartz watches. And there's a battery, that battery powered. So the movement of the watch is really a function of the battery. That's where the root of it is. And you take the battery out and the watch stops. So we are eternal spiritual persons in temporary material bodies. That consciousness which we are exhibiting now, that is actually something which is spiritual. But at this point, it is, you could say, passing through, manifesting via a curtain of matter, which is the body. So, in regard to zombies and being brainwashed and stuff like that, our experience with chanting is that the consciousness, one's actual thinking processes, one's capacity to think clearly, objectively, accurately, it is helped greatly by the chanting, rather than you just becoming some sort of, you know, automatic type of entity, almost like a machine. But you actually develop in terms of your conscious faculties and capabilities. So, yes, This is a little bit about mantra meditation. We recommend you try it. Why not? You came here so to the Hare Krishna festival, you might as well go and know.
Another step further and give it a try. Okay, you know, I didn't even get around to the question, sorry about that. Our next speaker has arrived.
I think I will hand over to him and he can take the questions and take you through them. And the question sheet will come around again. You can write down other questions. And enjoy. Enjoy a spiritual experience. Thank you all very much for coming. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.